Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
What's up? Welcome to Comic Book Nation, the official podcast of comicbook.com. I am your host, Kofi Outlaw, and again with me are, from the comicbook.com staff, Mr. Matthew Aguilar.
What's up, everybody?
And, of course, Janelle Wheeler is with us.
Hello! Very excited about today.
And we have another person coming, right? Are we getting him in here right now? Or are we taking
He's coming in after the comic break, so we can talk wrestling.
Okay. Awesome. So we got wrestling today. So we have one of our wrestling experts, Connor Casey, coming on later because we got to talk about what is going down at WWE right now. So all you wrestling fans, be sure to stay tuned for that. But we also got the usual beats we got to cover in our geekdom culture coverage, which means we got to talk about Marvel's Eternals. We got a little into it last week, but we were all restrained, like, because we couldn't talk any spoilers, because none of you guys have been able to see the film. But today, Eternals is out in theaters, and so at the very end of this show, I move things around, so we put it at the very end, so only people who do not care immediately about spoilers or people who have get a chance to see the film, you guys can rock with us for the show, and then at the end, we're going to do Eternal spoilers discussions, because we got a lot more to get into that we couldn't say last week. But this week, you know, the muzzles are off, and we're going in. So at the end of the show, we will talk about Eternal spoilers. Before that, there's a lot that happened this week that we got to break down. We got to talk about some big new trailers that came out for the Morbius movie, the new Star Wars series, Book of Boba Fett. We have some reviews to go about things that are going to be hitting Netflix that you guys should see. So we're going to talk about those. We got some fun new comics to talk about this week. And like I said, wrestling as well. I love these shows because this is kind of what really shows what comicbook.com is all about. We're eclectic. You can't peg us down into one thing. We're all over the place. So we're going to be talking some Marvel, some movies, some comics, some wrestling. So let's get to it. All right. So did you guys remember that Morbius is happening? Like, you know, it got lost in the pandemic here, but Morbius is a movie. It's the kind of the expansion of Sony's Sony Spider-Man universe, and Jared Leto stars as Michael Morbius, and we finally got this kind of full trailer for Morbius, which is going to be hitting, early next year. Yeah, is where it got moved. I can't remember where movies are anymore. But this trailer was, I wasn't very, overjoyed about the first Morbius. It was just kind of like, yeah, that's a movie. Jared Leto's in it. But I liked the second trailer. It gave me more of the flavor and tone. It also let me know what Leto is going to be doing to be Leto in this movie. And so, you know, he can't just be Michael Morbius. He's got to get on two, crutches and, you know, be dragging himself. You know, he's always going for that Oscar, but that's okay. It seems that they found a good balance. Yeah, I mean, I like him. I like him. But it seems like they got a good balance.
I like him.
Yeah.
Leto gonna Leto.
So I mean, good. Leto's the only man who could come out of the wilderness and be like, wait, there's a pandemic? You know, which is a true story of what happened last year. You know, that man was out in the desert meditating for like a week and came back when COVID hit and was like, huh? Oh, but anyway, that's Leto's world. But anyway, so it looks like they've put him to good use in this. And so the kind of makeup effects and the power effects for Morbius looked a lot cooler in this kind of more finished trailer. And squee to all the fans out there. We got these first kind of big confirmations of Sony expanding the universe with Venom references that kind of show this takes place after Let There Be Carnage, when Venom has been outed to the kind of the world. And there's even a We Are Venom joke in Morbius. So Sony is really not holding back with these connections. But that was my takeaway. It was better than I thought I would like Morbius. What did you guys think? Leto fan, let's start with you.
Yay! Oh my gosh. I feel like Phil in the chat said it perfectly. The trailer got me hyped and I wasn't at all before. I feel very much on this same vein. Like even Leto couldn't get me like super pumped about it because I don't know a lot about this comic, this character. Obviously I know no backstory whatsoever. And I feel like in this trailer, they painted a picture for me. I know his story just by the trailer. And that is a successful trailer to me because it tells me why, like what happened, how he was before. And, you know, it has me intrigued on what's going to like, how that story is going to play out. I thought it was a fabulous trailer.
Yeah. I'm kind of in Kofi's camp of like, I forgot this movie was happening. so then when they were like started teasing it again, I was like, oh my God, like this might actually be a thing. And the trailer was better than I expected, but I had very like low expectations. I'm not a big like Morbius person anyway. Like if that character just never really like done anything for me. So I'm kind of going in with a very clean slate. Like I don't have a lot of like expectations of what this needs to be or like the comic personification of Morbius. Like I don't have that. So I just want to be entertained. And this looks interesting, you know. Sony's
you're a 90s kid enough to stump for Darkhawk and Cardiac, but not Morbius.
I'm like this character, this Morbius is I don't dislike Morbius. Like, but like there are other characters, especially in the Spider-Man universe. Like the Spider-Man universe alone is so full of crazy D-list, F-list characters. I mean, I care more about Solo than I care about Morbius.
Well, Morbius is always, I mean, to be fair, Morbius has been like Marvel's weird. He's one of Marvel's weird, like middle children. Like they don't quite ever feel like they know what to do with him per se. But like, he's always been cool. I mean, I'm a vampire person. So that's like, you know, that's my kick right there. I love vampire stuff. So I've always liked him and I liked his kind of thing. And he weirdly aligns with Venom very well. So I could see this working in a film universe. As like a team of people trying not to kill people as they save the world, like would actually be kind of a fun little premise for this. But Chloe over on Facebook. Hey, I'm sorry, Chloe over on Facebook. We are talking about the new Morbius trailer starring Jared Leto. So nobody feels left out in this podcast. So that's Chloe over on Facebook. We are talking about Morbius, the new trailer. Morbius. Which you can check out on comicbook.com /Marvel. All right. So
Jim is in here and he says Morbius looks great. What a great design.
Yeah, I totally agree. Jim had me write a story today that said a beloved Christmas movie is coming to Disney Plus.
And then wait, which one?
Is it the Nintendo one? Is it the Nintendo?
Jingle All the Way.
Jingle All the Way.
Oh, so I was using this as a point to maybe point out Jim's hyperbole, but apparently Matt's totally in line with that opinion, so Jim was totally in line with that headline.
One of Sinbad's finest films.
Moving right along.
Oh, my God.
Let's talk about the Book of Boba Fett. All right, so Star Wars universe is expanding from The Mandalorian with the Book of Boba Fett, which is this quote-unquote event series that that's going to start Tamara Morrison and Ming-Na Wen as Fennec Shand. And it's basically going to be about Boba Fett stepping into the aftermath of, you know, the Empire's fall and Return of the Jedi and trying to take over Jabba the Hutt's criminal empire. And basically we're getting something like people have said like Peaky Blinders or The Godfather in space. I'm with that. I'm here for it. And yeah. We'll get into it in a little bit, but this is also a great, I think, going to be an exciting extension of Star Wars comics, and we'll geek out on that in a second. But what'd you guys think? Book of Boba Fett. Matt, what did you think about this?
I was hyped.
All right. And for reference, Matt's not even like the biggest Star Wars guy in the world.
No, Mandalorian has consistently like just, I'm really not. Like I enjoy Star Wars, but Mandalorian has really kind of kickstarted that love of the franchise in a lot of ways. And even like from Kofi talking about all the ties to Rebels and things like that has had me diving into those shows and then the comics. So like it's really kind of a Star Wars renaissance for me over the last couple years. But this man, like I am just so, also it doesn't hurt that like, you know, the ties to the original, like it's just so cool to see Boba on that throne, in those places that you know from the movies, there is that. And I just love these characters, man, coming out of Mandalorian, you know, season two. I did not think, like, oh, I would be jonesing for a Boba Fett series, but here we are. Yeah. So,
Jay, what'd you think?
Yeah, I'm really excited about this, surprisingly. Again, I'm not the biggest Star Wars fan, but I'm surprised. It's just the world building. Like, they just, it looks beautiful. And I'm so interested in this world. And I'm just really, I'm really excited about this. I really feel like I'm going to be Paula today because I'm loving everything that's coming out right now. I'm just happy as can be to see content. I really am.
J.D. Smith artist, you are speaking blasphemy, sir. He is just going in about Boba being an empty thing. We can take that on. Yes, Boba Fett was for a lot of years the ultimate. And I mean, he set the tone for what franchises did with characters that barely have any presence that have become merchandising cash cows.
Captain Phasma.
Yeah, there you go. Boom. So, oh, wow.
Well, I mean, seriously.
I mean, you are not wrong. The truth is what hurts in my heart right now. But yeah, so that's another great example. So Star Wars has mastered this. But to be fair, in recent years, they have expanded a lot on who Boba Fett is. Like Matt alluded to, if you watch things like the animated series Clone Wars and Rebels, like his whole childhood after, you know, Attack of the Clones and him learning to be a master kind of criminal and smuggler and all that was kind of interesting. Then his comeback in The Mandalorian. We still need to know how he got out of the Sarlacc pit and what happened and all that, but I'm sure we're going to get flashbacks to that in this series. Has been interesting. And just the kind of expanding, because people now care so much more about Mandalore, Mandalorians, that armor and all that stuff, Jango and Boba Fett's story and their history has all been kind of punched up to kind of fit in line with that. And so all that's interesting. I'm just here to see a crime story in Star Wars, which is like what I've been waiting forever to see, which is a Star Wars, like a dirty, gritty Star Wars underworld series. And this seems like this is finally going to be it. Now, I will murk out and say, if you've been reading Star Wars comics, which again, we push for on this show, we are called Comic Book Nation, but we keep saying like, you really should dive into these comics because they are great. I think we've stumped harder than almost anybody for these War of the Bounty Hunters crossover, which was centered around Boba Fett and what happened when he tried to get Han Solo's body to Jabba in the first place. But there's evidence in this series trailer that we could get a tie-in to these comics and that Crimson Dawn could be involved. They came back in the comics. Those the organization from Solo and Kira, you know, Amelia Clark's character from Solo is now a major character in Star Wars comics again. And she has a grudge with Boba Fett over this whole Han Solo thing. So there's seemingly room. We know that Crimson Dawn is being kind of positioned to retcon that they made a play for things after the Empire fall and kind of were in position to help that happen and even in position to help Leia and them get Han back from Jabba. And so there could be a way that they are trying to fill the void and, you know, Boba's competition for Jabba's throne is with Crimson Dawn, which ties it back to Solo. So there's a lot of things that could be very surprising and exciting about this series. That's all to say. So again, if you have not been doing your research on like the Boba Fett and you just still know him from the original trilogy, it's worth looking into before this series gets here because they've actually made a character out of this guy and Star Wars is better for it.
Yeah.
I
think, yeah, it does. Well said.
I mean, you're a resident expert and it just builds the hype even more.
Yeah. So, I mean, even Jim Viscardi is on board with this and we are in rare agreement, you know, so that is that. So those are those trailers. I think we're hyped for both of these things. One maybe more mildly than the other, but still hype.
I mean, I'm more hype for Morbius personally.
We know your reasons and they are not whole.
let's not get it twisted. I'm more excited about that, but, yeah.
We
but both
know
are
your
good.
Reasons and they are not wholesome. Great. So anyway, but you know, then you get to Ming-Na and I can't say anything. So we'll keep moving. All right. Just some quick notices on our What to Watch segment where we try to kind of let you guys know what there is out there to watch if you haven't been up on it yet. And maybe it's interactive. So if you guys ever want to give us stuff that you want to put up that you feel we're not talking about, but should be watching and sharing with others, please, you know, follow us at Comic Book Nation on Twitter and drop your suggestions to us because we want to hear them. This show is for you guys. All right, I'm up first with Netflix's new movie of the week, which is The Harder They Fall. And I wish I had done some kind of more like preparation research for this. Oh, man. But The Harder They Fall, there we go, IMDb, thank you, is a movie that I've just been running around kind of championing as a black cowboy movie, which is basically what it is. It's by James Samuel, who is a very kind of upcoming thing filmmaker who's showing this unique kind of stylistic way of making movies, genre movies, and that's on full display in The Harder They Fall, which is very much kind of very stylistic funk music influence, great soundtrack.
That soundtrack.
Yeah. Oh man, I copped that right after I saw the movie. I was like, oop, Apple Music, boom. So yeah, great soundtrack and just a like just all-star ensemble of actors. Jonathan Majors, who's joined, you know, from Loki and Lovecraft Country, Zazie Beetz from Atlanta and Deadpool 2. You know, RJ Seiler, who's Power Rangers, Eddie Gaffey, you know.
He's so good in this too.
Yeah, RJ Seiler?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a scene stealer in this. RJ, you know, Eddie Gaffey, who was Darwin in X-Men First Class. Whole bunch of people are in this. Damon Wayans Jr. And of course, you know, the lead, of course, Idris Elba and my girl, Regina King, who like I tweeted.
So much.
Yeah. Cause they're like, I've never met a person who lives up their name more so than Regina King. Like she just rules anything she's in. So Regina King from Watchmen, of course. So
you were not wrong.
This is just a classic Western kind of revenge thriller with a showdown between two gangs. Nothing too complicated, really kind of simple genre stuff. But like I said, the ensemble is really good. The dialogue, the banter, and just the style of this and the scenes and the way it's filmed. Samuel does this. It's really great. Really good kind of feature. And even a little twist at the end that I didn't see coming, which was really good. So,
yeah. Oh my God. Okay. That scene, not going to get into the context or anything, but that scene is amazing. There's so much great acting in that scene. That is, man, what a fantastic movie.
Yeah, James Samuel has, he's a guy who's clearly watched a lot of like Guy Ritchie and Tarantino movies. And this feels like a kind of marriage of those because it has that kind of weird kinetic stuff that Ritchie does. But it also is very much has these kind of very extended scenes that are very much talking scenes. Like the opening scene, which is very Quentin Tarantino from like one character's point of view. And it's just dialogue and you never see that character and everything. But really enjoyed this. So The Harder They Fall is on Netflix. If you're looking for something this weekend and you are a fan of Westerns like or Idris Elba, Jonathan Majors, Regina King or any of these awesome actors, like check it out because you won't be sorry. Matt, you got something special for the people to share. Let's share it.
What was the Red Notice?
That's what you're
singing.
I another to you.
What? I didn't sing. There was nothing to sing. I was gonna sing something that has no like real intro for that. So anyway,
darn it.
Keep
we
it
need
with
more
the Netflix
Matt
thing though. Keeping with the Netflix thing is Red Notice, which comes out next week. But reviews and embargo impressions are going live, and you can find more of that stuff on comicbook.com. We've talked about this like trailer, it's just being kind of this super fun thrill ride type thing. I think Kofi coined it the movie. I think at some point it was kind of like all this stuff that you kind of come to expect from stuff with The Rock, Ryan Reynolds, and Gal Gadot in all in one movie. And it pretty much is that. And I enjoyed the snot out of it. I'd really like had a blast with this. I mean, it's very like if you liked Hobbs and Shaw, they're similar vibes, right? Ryan Reynolds and The Rock have great chemistry together.
So basically, those scenes from Hobbs and Shaw with Ryan Reynolds and The Rock.
Well, here's the thing. Ironically, so like Hobbs and Shaw, because it's Statham, you know, who's like more of a, to me anyway, it's got more of like the action hit a little different. So like I actually preferred the action scenes in Hobbs and Shaw to Red Notice, but I actually prefer the scenes just between Reynolds and Rock where they're just like dialogue and back and forth. I actually enjoy those more than I did those scenes in Hobbs and Shaw. Like their chemistry just in being in a scene together is fantastic. I wasn't like as impressed with like the big action set pieces as I was in Hobbs and Shaw. And I just think I've come like I think that's more to do with like Statham's really good at those movies and makes like almost any scene that he's in those movies pop even more than it does on paper. And in this one, they're fine. I enjoyed them. I love seeing her in like a villain role. It's fun. She has fun with it. She's clearly having fun with it. So, you know, it's not going to win Oscars. It's not that type of movie. But I enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. I thought it like hit that sweet popcorn blockbuster feel note that I was kind of looking for.
It's a Netflix movie. J.D. Smith already says, so it's Rock as Rock and Reynolds shows up as Red.
I mean, here's the thing. People, because I totally agree. Yes, but that's what they are in every movie. I mean, that, aside from Will Smith's, like, you know, when he goes for like, when he goes for an Oscar, you know what I mean? When he goes for like an award season type of thing, Will Smith's pretty much Will Smith in every movie. I mean, you could say that about most. Channing Tatum is almost Channing Tatum in almost every movie, except for the ones that, like, you can clearly see he's pushing himself to a different thing. That's the same with Ryan Reynolds. I mean, is he not Ryan Reynolds in Free Guy? We love Free Guy. He's Ryan Reynolds in Free Guy.
True.
You know, it's the same type of thing, but I'm okay with it.
All right. So that's Red Notice. And when does that come out? That's next week, right?
That's next
November
week,
12th. Yes. All right. So we have The Harder They Fall on Netflix this week, Red Notice this week. Or you can watch some excellent stuff on Paramount Plus where we stream, which is also awesome. So
you can watch us.
Yes, exactly. That was the bigger selling point. You can watch Matt be Matt, Kofi be Kofi, and Janelle. Well, I mean, you're nobody else but Janelle. No, I was trying to think of a comparison, but you're only, I mean, Janelle's like, you're too many people in one. So Janelle, whatever phase of Janelle we're in this week. Will she break dance? Will she sing? Will she make a cake?
Will she make a cake?
We don't know.
Cosplay.
Well, there you go. Boom. Jack of all trades.
Oh, by the way. All right. A Gamora cosplay.
Oh, yeah. We got to shout that out. Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Man.
Gamora, yeah. Star-Lord, and my dog is Yondu. Let's go.
Yeah, you guys. The family pick. So good.
Yeah, you guys did it. You guys did Guardians right. That was weird. So, yeah, we got to shout that out, Janelle. You did a killer cosplay.
Thanks. I got retweeted by James Gunn.
Wow. There you go. Boom.
That's pretty cool.
That's better than me just yelling at him all the time to do things, which he never responds to.
He'll probably
All right,
will.
We're going to take a break. And when I get myself together, we're going to come back because we have to talk about comics, the crazy things that just happened in wrestling, and, of course, the main event. We are going full spoilers on Marvel's Eternals. We got a lot to talk about. Be sure to join us when we come back. We are back. For the second half of our show, we are going to be talking about comics, the crazy things that are happening in wrestling right now, and end things with a full spoilers discussion of Marvel's Eternals. So up first, let's go with comics. Matt, we're going to do a little bit tighter this week, but let's talk about they're all good books, so let's get into them.
Yeah, I just want to start this out by saying it was hilarious in the comic book chat. Before, when picking these books, everybody got the book they really wanted to read this week, and we had different choices, but it was kind of like, it was just fun as a person who like assigns these to see like, oh my god, I'm reading that anyway, so you might as well just like assign that. It's like, yeah, that's awesome. And the poll made the book I really wanted to read happen. So let's start with Death of Doctor Strange, Avengers number one. This is of course a tie-in to the ongoing Death of Doctor Strange series. This picks up after the events of the second issue, where we see that younger Doctor Strange come in and he has a certain amount of time to kind of figure out who killed him and all that. This is very much a I feel like it will end up being critical. So like it is a tie-in in the loosest sense, at least as it seems right now. There's some, like, I feel like anyway, story important things that happen here and some insight into like a greater plan at work amidst an Avengers story. So I feel like this is actually probably one you should read if you are following that story along. I enjoyed it. I thought it really surprised me because at first I wasn't feeling it, and it kind of was a little slow build for me. And I was like, okay, I've kind of seen this stuff before. And then by the end, I was hooked, and it tells kind of a very personal story as it moves on, and one that may have importance down the line. So that I ended up really digging this issue after not starting so hot with it. Janelle, what'd you think?
I just want to say I love that the people in the comments are like, is that Juggernaut?
that's
why you should read it, because it's really exciting. And because of that, I don't want to spoil anything. So I'm just going to say I feel that this is going to be, it's going to have a really cool payoff, and I'm intrigued by how it all kind of like fits in with the previous books, just like you said. And yeah, I thought it was great. I, even though there's no Strange,
They're talking. He's barely in here.
Yeah, they're talking about him. And that is enough for me. Like, and it's, I thought it, I really liked Iron Man in this one. Like a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. That, well, and that's the biggest thing, right? Is that we actually get the few strange scenes we get are actually in the past, for the most part. And it's again, it's a, if people are Illuminati fans, you will get a kick out of some of the things that happen in this issue as well. I really dug it from that. Kofi, what do you think?
I was surprised that about how big in scope this kind of makes the death of Doctor Strange feel. I didn't understand. I thought we were just kind of reading a limited series or something. But this event obviously has opened the door to a lot of other things Marvel can play with. There's just the general premise that because Doctor Strange is gone, this magical barrier that's been protecting us this entire time is gone with him. And now all these mystical threats can start popping up. That was really good because it really expanded on how this affects the entire kind of Marvel universe, as opposed to just the magical Doctor Strange corners of it. And I was really actually, it was funny to see a comic book deal with the battles that have taken before that have, or that have been happened before, because the Avengers got their tails kicked by these new villains, the three sisters or their, whatever they're called.
Mothers.
The three mothers. Yeah. And we were talking about how good it was in the second issue of Death of Doctor Strange, these to have actual frightening mystical villains that are Avengers level threats. And seeing how they have like basically PTSD from like facing these villains is really interesting, especially Iron Man. Because we said that was so creepy, that one mother who was just made up of the statue covered in worms and stuff, and it got in his armor, and you know, seeing him deal with that and hearing him kind of start to barrel over the edge towards his alcoholism and things like that. It was a really kind of interesting thing that makes these villains, their presence feel felt. And so as far as tie-ins goes, this wasn't just like some random story connected to the other one. This actually had stakes. I thought it got weird towards the end with like Iron Man and the other dimension. And when I'm just hope they stick the landing with this child thing, like, because it feels like it get a little too, you know, wonky on the mysticism side, but I hope they can balance it, because the opening with Iron Man saying why he doesn't trust Doctor Strange and like all of that, and his kind of anxiety that magic makes Tony Stark feel because of who he is all real good stuff. So I hope it doesn't get too far out there.
I love those two. Golly. Yeah. I hate that we're not getting more of that in the MCU.
In the MCU. Yeah. Well, and I think this is actually I can't remember off the top of my head now, but I think it's a 3-issue series, the Avengers one tie-in. So, and I agree. I think with Kofi, as far as like one of my favorite scenes is actually when Iron Man is walking through some of like the worlds that Doctor Strange has to monitor.
And yes.
He walks in. He's like, how does he deal with this? Oh my God, it would drive me nuts.
Yeah.
And the shower scene with all the armor, like he keeps having it recleaned and he keeps having it reanalyzed. Yeah, some good stuff there.
Bun from the G, you can just start by jumping on the Death of Doctor Strange number one.
Oh
yeah,
if you want to jump for into sure this. Two issues easy. In and then right here
there's only been three chapters of this and two chapters and a tie-in, so it's still early.
By the way, there is a and I'm very curious too to see how this goes into Devil's Reign, which is like the next one that comes.
Mephisto coming, y'all.
There's a lot of stuff coming. So let's move into something that was as disturbing as it was last time, and it's different. And the one Kofi was so excited, he was like, "I'm reading Soul Plumber number 2." Like you can decide what you want. I'm reading that. I was like, okay. So Soul Plumber number 2. You know, if you remember where we left off. Essentially, this guy creates his own machine that can theoretically reach into people's souls and clean them. And the issue ended with a heck of a cliffhanger. And you're like, okay, did he do it and did he not? And the answer is, well, kind of. and in fact, now he's done something pretty bad. And he's brought something else into this world. And then now you're getting all kinds of other stuff. Like there's that other, like without going into crazy spoilers, the ending kind of alludes to like, okay, now we have this faction that wants what he's brought in, and there's a bunch of like there's a lot of stuff to hit in this issue. Mm-hmm. It's also just there are some pages, there's one page in particular in this book that I went, why does that page have to be there? I don't understand it. And it's just like sometimes like the creepy crawlies in me gets like, ugh, like I don't always want to read stuff like this, but I thought this was really good again, and it's just a weird series. What do you guys think?
I mean, I love this series. First of all, it's been a long time since we've had some Robert Crumb type stuff in comics. And if you don't know who that is, please look up Crumb, and his work is so influential. But this gritty, dirty world that this comic is inhabiting was great. But I love that the first issue was just... Okay, so the premise for anybody listening of Soul Plumber is there's this guy who's crazy, but he's like a religious fervor crazy guy, but he's basically like a bum in like a nutcase, right? And so he goes to this seminar where people are selling these soul cleaning machines, and it's a con artist thing, but he takes it and he really buys into it, and he makes his machine and he tries to cure his homeless, crazy, you know, guy that he knows of being possessed, quote unquote. And the issue ended with him like ripping into this guy and taking out what he sees is a demonic, you know, entity. And we were left with, is this guy crazy or is any of this possibly real? And now this issue handles that question so well. And just kind of like, for the whole time, you're like, this dude's just really nuts. Until like the end of issue two, where they're like, maybe not so much. Like somehow he has Forrest Gumped his way into like this situation where he's messing with the forces of nature and it's getting real big. And there's like other organizations out there. Like it's just good. And it's just the way this plays with like horror, comedy, and just satire of, you know, the way that certain things like, you know, religious beliefs are used against people and against, you know, the poor, the downtrodden, the mentally unstable people in the world it's interesting stuff. And if nothing else, this series gets a reaction out of you. So, yeah, it's very visceral, I guess would be the word.
I mean, you said it perfectly. You just literally summed up everything. I guess I'll just add to this. It feels like, did anybody read like highlights when you were a kid and you'd find the hidden images section and you'd like go through and try to scribble and find all those hidden images? Like it's so detailed in some images that you're just like, oh my gosh, is there like a hidden sock that I'm supposed to be finding? Or it just reminds me of like a hidden image book. It's just really cool to look at. The art is just unique and really interesting. I like it a lot. The whole thing is just great. Also, I thought that I really thought he was just imagining the entity until the end. And I was like, oh no, this is actually happening. Like it's not just him like hallucinating that he found a spirit. Like this actually happened.
Also, I just love the name Blorp.
Blorp, yeah.
That's just like, wow.
And I just love this character, like how just like seeing his past and all that stuff. And like, yeah, it's just, yeah, it's crazy. When you try to join the seminary, it's a world and it like draws you in. And mm-hmm. It is definitely a world. So it is definitely a vibe.
Definitely right. One to pick up. Moving on to the book I was most, to complete the trifecta, the one I was most looking forward to was Dark Knights of Steel number one, which is has everything I love. Superheroes, knights, medieval swords, King Castles. Arthur vibes. Like I was in from the minute. And then you add in Tom Taylor and I'm sold. So this is like another in kind of his, you know, reimaginings of the DC universe that he does so well, at least in my opinion, he does incredibly well. And you know, it's funny because this book, like right from probably, I guess like the fourth page, maybe, kind of surprised me in, we're so used to seeing, and the premise of this, by the way, is that if Superman's, obviously, as a kid, he was put in the rocket and the rocket hit Earth, and then he was discovered by Ma and Pa Kent, and that's how he was raised, and, you know, he's raised by humans, and that's why he feels close, yada, yada. So in here, the beginning part of that is correct, and what they described in the official synopsis was always like, okay, so he crash lands, and then, but he crash lands in, like, a different time and place, right? So this is going to be kind of a King Arthur vibe and stuff like that. But the rocket opens and it's like, oh snap. Like he wasn't alone in the rocket and his parents are there. So like, I was like, oh man, and she hasn't even had him yet. She's like about to have the baby. And like,
so Jor-El and Lara.
Yes.
Yes.
So like that alone, like in the first five pages, very much sets a different, completely kind of changes like your assumptions about what this story, how the story will play out, because you just expect it. You're so used to seeing that typical way that we've seen a lot of stories, like The Nail, Red Sun, all of those kind of start with that same premise. Oh, he lands at a different place in time and what happens to him. So like for this to kind of change that up is really interesting. And then we just get a really, really good, interesting Tom Taylor ride through DC Universe, like having Bruce Wayne be the son of Jor-El, but like he had an affair with like Martha before they, because they were like,
why did you say court. That name?
And so like, oh my now. God, don't bring that up.
I've had so many jokes, so many jokes.
Like that is a big, like that's really interesting. And then it's always fun too to see like the re-envisionings of like the different characters, right? So like Black Canary makes an appearance here. You see the Robins and how they're now done. There's just a lot of fun stuff, but the actual core story about like the inner court and the family, I really found interesting, and what they've done with Bruce Wayne. So I felt like I was going to be sold. This was kind of a book made for me. And then ultimately that's pretty much what happened. what'd you guys think?
Jay, why don't you go first?
Oh gosh. It was just awesome. These books this week, they're just so good. Oh, I loved this one. I actually, I didn't know what to expect whatsoever. And so this whole trip was just really exciting and refreshing, and it gets you just pumped about these characters all over again in a whole new way, and I love that. And when they introduced Bruce, I was like, what? Like, I love that he has the cowl with the, you know, bat ears, but it's like not a cowl, I guess it's like armor. And
Harley Quinn was great about
Harley Quinn, oh my gosh. Oh, it's just, it's so refreshing. I feel like that's a perfect word. It's just a super refreshing book.
Yeah. Also, yeah. Alfred with the killer line.
Alfred!
Yeah, with the killer, that glare he gives.
Yeah!
That's just what he does when he's lost an argument. Yeah. It's like, yes, quintessential.
There's just so many good moments, honestly. And each character has their own moment, like, in it. Mm-hmm. So that's really nice to see.
Yeah,
it was very much like I didn't know how to expect, because I mean it was very Elseworldies traditional, but those can be hit or miss with these kind of premises
for sure.
But yeah, this one was really good. I mean, it felt like an episode of Game of Thrones in the DC universe, and by Game of Thrones, I mean it had all like the intrigue of the dialogue scenes and the political stuff and the, you know, all the stuff that medieval stuff is, you know, cool, the rules of heredity and all that kind of stuff going on in it. And you can see where this can go into a major kind of division and conflict and become Batman versus Superman eventually. And just the way, the thing that can be like kind of hokey about Elseworlds is how they reposition people in the DC universe. But this all felt very natural and kind of logical and even cool, right? Like, and in a lot, I think the artwork had a lot to do with that too, making it feel very kind of medieval painting-ish and very cool. But just seeing like Black Lightning as King Jefferson of this rival kingdom.
Yes.
And then in the history, and just all the things that are implied, because there's a time jump between the opening scene of when the, you know, the house, the El, Jor-El and his wife land and have, and then 19 years later. But there's a lot of stuff that's implied that went down in that 19 years that we're going to have to find out about. And Batman just being scared of the lightning, because obviously Jefferson Pierce is Black Lightning, and him being a king means he can probably command these powers. That's probably why he's king. And just seeing that, like the green man. Just seeing small things that are corny but make sense and turned out to be funny. Like Harley Quinn as a court jester is, you know, what that's what you would do in a medieval thing, but it works because she, in her scene, is hilarious when she's just ragging on the Bat Knight. You know, and the Robins being like a squad and just seeing all of them working together, Jason and
Todd's
and Cassie. And
that whole scene is so good.
Yeah. And it's the right kind of hokiness in it, and it feels fun. And, you know, he's doing what Tom Taylor does, which is telling you this Elseworlds story that you most likely will want to see become its own kind of world and timeline. So kudos to DC, because now they're going medieval too. They're going zombies. Now they're going medieval. There's nothing this guy can't do.
Yeah, seriously, man. Just keep, look, keep handing him crazy. What, like, I love Elseworlds. I was an Elseworlds kid. Like, I love those fun, just alternate things. So this stuff is just so good. I love it. Eat it up.
Mm-hmm.
That's comics.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get our wrestling expert in here. Mr. Connor Casey. Yay, technology. Look at that. Seamless on this show now.
Seamless transition.
All right, Matt Connor. Some really hectic things started happening. We had to rearrange the show because some really hectic things started happening yesterday on the wrestling side of our geekdom. So, Connor, why don't you take it away and tell us what is going down?
Well, I'll tell you what's going down. 18 wrestlers were released from their contracts on Thursday night, approximately 1 hour after WWE had its corporate conference call, where they confirmed that the company has generated over $250 million, that's billion with a B, in the last 3 months. So money-wise, they're doing pretty good. But what was the reason given for all of these releases? The same for the rest that we've had this year, 72 in total. Budget cuts. Somehow this all has to do with budget cuts. At least that's the line we're being given. And Matt is giving me a look right now that says he doesn't believe that, nor should you watching at home. The fact of the matter is, for some of these, even in this group, it was because they asked for their releases. Also in this group, some simply refused to get vaccinated. At least one person has been outed as to have not done that. New York Post is reporting that Nia Jax refused to get vaccinated, and so she got canned. I've heard some of the names of some of the other people that refused. We're hearing between 4 and 5. The names I heard sadly did not surprise me, but I won't specifically say who until that comes out elsewhere. Finally, the big question, and Matt, I saw the run sheet, and it was, why is all of this happening? Well, it's for a couple of really big reasons. One is that it actually is financially driven, but not in the way that they're saying. This is the consequences of their own actions from what happened in 2018 and 2019. I will take you back a couple of years before the pandemic, a simpler time. You had AEW just getting started up. You had New Japan and Ring of Honor selling out Madison Square Garden. So suddenly WWE has competition here stateside. On top of that, they're also pitching the idea of effectively snuffing out the independent scene by running it. Some of you may remember the presentation Triple H gave, where he presented all of these different NXT branches in different parts of the world, different hotbeds of pro wrestling. This is why we got NXT UK. They pitched NXT Japan, NXT Brazil, NXT Mexico. I think there was one in Africa. I would have been curious what they were all going to look like, but the plans fell through for a couple of reasons. One, the pandemic. Two, NXT Japan was a non-starter. They tried to just buy one of the big three companies over there. They said no, and good luck trying to start a promotion from scratch when you've got one that has multiple companies that have been around for generations. So you take all that. How WWE reacted to it at the time was, well, we need as big of a roster as possible, and we don't want anybody going to this competition that's suddenly popping up. So they lock in as many of their current wrestlers as possible to big, long-term, lucrative contracts. They also try and gobble up as many wrestlers from the indie scene as possible so that they can be shunted to either NXT or one of these other branches that they're trying to start up. But then COVID happens. And they get a new president named Nick Khan, who is very bottom line driven. He is very financially focused. And depending on who you ask, maybe they're gearing up for some sort of sale and they want the books to look as good as possible. So that's part of why you get all of these releases, because suddenly you don't have all of these contracts to start paying for. The other thing, and Matt, you know this firsthand because you cover NXT 2.0 each week, is that WWE is doubling down on what they believe their stars need to be. They need to be young. They need to be purebred, homegrown, dyed in the soil. I don't know if that's the right phrase. They needed to have come from the Performance Center. Dyed in the wool. That was the phrase I was looking for. They needed to have come from the Performance Center and nowhere else. And you will notice that some of the biggest stars that were cut this time around What did they all have in common? They had all made their names somewhere else.
Yeah.
And had come into the company with expectations as a result. And if you look at people that are being let go, people that are, they're just allowing contracts to expire, your Adam Coles, your Daniel Bryans, it shows the trend that they're trying to get as much of anyone who has even the scent of independent wrestling on them out of there in favor of guys like Ron Breaker and Von Wagner and 20 other people that they've introduced in the last month.
The Bron Breakker is going to be a star, though.
Bron Breakker will be a star, but he's a Steiner. So that's where that comes from. So
I don't want to but I don't want to get into the thing of discounting the talent that is there because like all these people, you know what
Tony
I mean?
Tony D'Angelo, man.
I love Tony D'Angelo. That dude is amazing. That dude is awesome. Don't you dare hate on
Gabagool.
Gabagool. Oh, it's so good. Anyway. What were we talking about? What was the topic? You mentioned Tony D'Angelo.
I go on this five-minute rant, and you just flop.
Wow, Jim Viscardi's in the comments saying he is offended.
About what? What did I say about him?
About Tony D'Angelo, probably. Who knows? But anyway, those are the many, many reasons why this is all happening. It sucks. It's unfortunate. It's not as unfortunate as it was last year, because when all those firings happened, nobody had anywhere to go because the pandemic had shut down every other promotion. The only option you had was go to Daly's place down in Jacksonville where it was empty and try to sneak your way onto an AEW show on a one-off if you could. And that didn't happen to a lot of folks.
Right.
But Matt, so what is your reaction to what transpired yesterday?
Honestly, a mix of every time this happens. I mean, it's always kind of the mix of two things. It's like, it doesn't shock me anymore. Certain names do surprise me, you know, to hear them on there. But like, overall, like these things don't surprise me anymore. It's like, I don't understand them from a talent perspective, but I understand, okay, well, WWE is very much leaning into it. Ironically, this follows a lot of the similar patterns we saw in WCW's time. Mm-hmm. It's very much, and if you look back at that, I mean, look, I've made frequent comparisons from AEW to WCW because they followed a similar blueprint. Tony Khan's a big fan of WCW. So, like, you know, again, I'm not saying they make the same mistakes, but I'm just saying they follow a similar blueprint. Mm-hmm. And in this case, you can see WWE reacting a lot like they did back then, which is, hey, we're gonna lean into what we do, which is characters and whatever, and last time around that didn't work. That didn't work, and we got
it was when they had to get out of their comfort zone that
right
they found
you have to push things, and in some cases, you know, 2.0 is a great example of this. In some cases, the ones that are working on 2.0 are, it's a mix. It's like, because obviously the whole point is not every single wrestler, not every single formula is going to work the same for every single wrestler. And you really need to approach them as individual people and accentuate what they do well. Tony D'Angelo is a perfect example. That character should not work. It's ridiculous. It's an over-the-top mobster dude, and it's clicking. It's clicking with fans and whatever. That's all you hear when, like, throughout the week, right? Anytime he's on the bump, that's all you hear. It's going over a fence. That does not mean that your poker theme is also going to work.
Or the Shawn Michaels music video.
Oh my God, that was terrible. So, like, you know what I mean? So it really needs to be an individual basis. And what WWE is doing is very much reacting like they did back then. I, you know, we're going to get into this in a minute, but like, this brings up a question of, at least now, after their non-competes go, they have somewhere to go. They have
Impact. They have lots of places to go.
They have New Japan.
ECW, MLW, Impact.
You know, and we've seen a lot since their non-competes have gone. We've seen a lot of them actually do all of them. Like we see a lot more people like signing in true independent contractor deals where they come in for a couple dates on Impact. Matt Cardona is a perfect example. Like goes, does Impact, does GCW, does other shows, and they're not really calling one particular show a home base. NWA is another example. Like Mickie James is running things there for, like, you know, Empower, but then she's also the champ over on Impact. We're seeing a lot more of that. So, you know, I'm not surprised. It's seeing some of the names on here did surprise me. You know, Ember Moon, Keith Lee, Karrion Kross, and Scarlett. Like, there are some names where I'm like, the only reason they didn't click as well as they should have is because of things you did. That's it. You know what I mean? So, yeah, it's frustrating.
Right. And, you know, the big frustration for fans comes from the fact that it's incredibly hard to get invested in a lot of these characters as is. A lot of them just aren't presented well. A lot of them lose. And they'll win one week, lose the next week.
Yeah.
It's always with a distraction finish, always with a roll-up. And then we run the same match over and over 6 weeks in a row. And then we pray that they'll move on to something better. On top of that now, you have to pray, oh, God, I hope they don't just suddenly get fired, even though I've seen them on TV consistently for the past month. It's kind of hard to get invested in people when that's always hanging over you now, no matter where you really, no matter where you are on the card, or no matter how much of a promising prospect you can be. Everybody had Keith Lee circled as WrestleMania main eventer. And the flashes that we had of it with him and Roman and him and Brock,
that Brock
that Lesnar showed that was a reality.
Oh my God. The crowd popped for that moment. And you
Brock
were like,
popped when he's like, oh, big fella.
Yeah.
At the Rumble. You're
can't
like,
mess it up. Can't. And then they did. It's like, oh my God, so frustrating.
No, Jim, he didn't pin Brock. That was the Rumble, but it was a big old face off between the two. And to get into your second point on the run sheet, Matt, because you might sometimes be a bit of an AEW hater, you immediately assumed that all of these people were going to get signed by AEW and that they were going to run into the same problem. But I am going to kill your argument with math.
But the question was not, I did not say they would. I said, will they?
Will they? The answer is no. And I will answer your question with math.
Okay.
Because I've added up every person that has gotten cut in 2020 and 2021. It's 121 active wrestlers. Mm-hmm. Would you like to know how many of them have actually signed with AEW full time?
Yeah.
14. And I'm giving you Serena Deeb and Tony Nese. Deeb was a trainer who got brought back in. Yeah. Nese has signed. We don't know what level of contract it is. That's 14. So take 121 divided by 14. What do you get? 8.6%.
Yeah.
AEW has not even signed a tenth of the people that WWE has released. So the argument that AEW is just gobbling up all these wrestlers that WWE is letting go is false.
But will they sign they in will, this particular
in this in this group? I think the same trend will follow. You get two, maybe three, and I think those
sign Moon and Lee.
No, I think the two that you sign are Moon and Keith.
Yeah,
you sign Keith because he's a future world champion, main eventer, could be the centerpiece of your company if you want. Ember Moon could be a pillar of your women's division. She could also be champion. There's a ton of great matchups for her to have. And number three, maybe you bring in Mia Yim just because of her connection to Keith. Maybe you bring in Taya if she doesn't want to go immediately go back to Impact. That's it.
Yeah, I feel like in both Cross and Scarlett and Taya, I think they're Impact bound. Like, that would
probably
make the most sense for them. Just honestly, just from like their character stuff and what they can do and things like that. Also because they were all formerly there. I think that would be a good fit for them. You know, as far as like Keith and it doesn't matter where they go, like they're going to be great regardless.
Keith is such a surefire bet. He is the only, and I've said this before on this show, I've said it elsewhere, he is the only one in this generation that reminds me of John Cena in the way he moves in the ring, in the charisma and the connection he has with fans. He's the only one. Everyone makes the Roman comparison. He wishes.
Who makes the Roman comparison? I don't think he's
people. Like, well, people will compare Roman to Cena because he's the head guy of
Roman
the generation
and the top guy. Yeah, but they're like nothing alike.
They're nothing. Yeah. The comparison stops there. Kofi, that is the bottom line with all of this. The releases are unfortunate, but all of these people will find opportunities elsewhere
for sure.
Okay, thank you guys. That's wrestling. Crazy.
Since I didn't watch this movie, I'm getting out of here. Bye, guys.
Later, Connor. You can check out comicbook.com wrestling for all the updates and breakdowns on what's going on, who's been let go, and, you know, speculation about what it could all mean. That leaves just one thing to talk about today. Our last segment will be our spoilers discussion of Marvel's Eternals. So we are going to be talking about Marvel's Eternals in full spoilers. If you have not seen the film, we waited to the end specifically so we could give you guys a chance to jump out. If you have not seen it, we are not going to spoil this for anybody. We are not trying to spoil a thing for anybody who hasn't seen it. This is your last chance. Spoiler alert! Marvel's Eternals going down right now. Okay, so last week, let's pick up this discussion because we talked about this last week, but I want to just kind of now say in full what I've said. I think that the biggest crime for this, I always say, you know, when a movie goes wrong, there's either three things that went wrong. Either the writer dropped the ball, the director dropped the ball, or the cast dropped the ball or was miscast in some kind of way. I think the Eternals ensemble does a great job. I don't think there's a problem there. I think Chloe Zhao is a great director. I don't think there's a problem here. But I think the problem with Eternals is that once again, Marvel Studios did what they did with Captain Marvel and wrote themselves into a corner that made for a not enjoyable film. Like the whole kind of way this movie, first of all, the characterizations of the Eternals is very uncertain and weird. Like, are they kind of robotic? Are they like robot people? Are they very feely people? It's kind of like uncertain, you know, how to kind of stage who these people are in terms of godlike beings who oversee all this stuff. So then, you know, the whole thing with their memories, again, every time Marvel Studios tries to mess with memories and thoughts and programming, it goes badly in these movies because you can't really get into the fun of these characters with these kind of weird programming stipulations in their head. That's what happened with Carol Danvers. And it's what happens in this movie, in my opinion, too. Like, and just trying to preserve the mystery of like trying to create an antagonist for this is really problematic. Because as it's revealed, you know, Icarus is the bad guy of this. He has, and it's not even a bad guy. This movie is so kind of like up there with its aloof ideas that it just can't settle on even a simple superhero formula. And I know some people are going to tout that as, oh, well, that's really great. And it's really like a mind thing. But it's like, kind of doesn't come across to the viewer, right? Like, who amongst the viewers is championing for this celestial world to be born and Earth to be wiped out so that more worlds can get made? Like, who among Earthlings actually gives a rat's behind about that? Like, nobody's cheering for that.
I don't cheer for it, but I, big picture, go, okay, like, that is sad, but I understand what it is.
Right. So if that happens tomorrow here, you're going to be like, ah,
no,
we had a good
I'm
going to
be like, please don't kill me. But
yeah,
but
exactly. Like, there we
but
go.
But like, I'm like spiritual and like meditative and like,
so
really
am
and, like,
I.
And, like,
I am enough to know that humanity would like, no human being is programmed to be in like, no, that's just, it's right. A hard thing to hang your thematic hat on in the movie.
Yeah.
And it makes the Eternals not necessarily look like good guys if they side with that opinion. Right. So like the whole hero thing. But this is just kind of muddled in the reveals and how it comes out. Like, none of it felt like very gripping to me when it's revealed that this is the case. And yeah, and then the Deviants, it's like, why are the Deviants in this movie? Like, there's a whole thing with the Deviants and they're just kind of a bait and switch. And it's just like, when we have a Deviant that mutates throughout this movie, and I don't think they even say his name in the film. Like, I don't think he gets a name, even though it's a...
Crow,
yeah. And I don't think they ever say his name because he never says anything. He doesn't introduce himself. He's supposed to be like a mindless beast that's barely getting sentient every time he eats an Eternal or sucks their life force out. But no explanation of why this guy's different, like what the deal is here or any of that. There's no characterization of the Deviants. They're just CGI things that are running around this movie just to keep them, the Eternals, running to another point.
Do you think they'll come back in some iteration with more importance?
Or I wouldn't care. Kind of like, yeah, I mean, I think this dropped the ball. Like, who cares about the Deviants after this? Like, yeah. I don't see.
I mean, I do because of the comics. Like, that, and that sucks because
the Deviants, like, aren't popular in the comics either.
Jim would be so happy right now if he was here to hear Janelle say that.
Well, just the fact that like Thanos is Deviant material is very interesting to me. Like, I want to know how or why, but obviously like the ones in the movie, like, I don't understand how he could, like, I don't know how that would
Yeah, we still don't. We watched 2 hours and 37 minutes of this, most of it exposition, and we still have no real concept of who the or what the Eternals are, like how this is tied to Thanos and you know, Star Fox's brother, you know, Harry Styles. Like, none of that feels cohesive or relevant or like anything like it matters. This movie was just kind of a weird mishmash. I don't want to get too serious, but I also have a real problem with the kind of the PR stunting about the inclusionary thing and the diverse cast in this and stuff. Because there are some finer points. This is like diversity by Disney, by in my opinion. Like, this is the most diversity by Disney thing I think I've ever seen. And in that sense, it still manages to get some questionable things wrong. First of all, you know, the two actual biggest inclusionary characters in this, who are Fastos and Makari, are like the last two I'm pretty sure Eternals introduce. And it's not like until like an hour and a half into the movie. You basically get a whole feature before we get to either of those characters, right? So like how much they're in the movie is questionable. Makari is the biggest thing I could see is just like, I feel like a Disney focus group was like sat down and was like, how many subtitles could people watch for a, you know, hearing impaired character before they begin to check out? Somebody did the math and was like, this many lines, and that's how many lines Makari gets in this movie. Because she is by far the most charismatic, enjoyable Eternal, in my opinion, and she gets the least amount to do in this movie. So how inclusionary that is questionable. I also have a problem, and this is more of a personal thing. While we're championing, like, you know, the things that Eternals does put out in its cast and the differences in the different races, the different, you know, sexual backgrounds of its characters, all that, there is this weird thing where this movie deals with this theme of, you know, the Eternals having to look at humanity over time and see how good or not they feel about humanity, which, again, as we said last week, it never chases that idea far enough. It doesn't chase any idea far enough. But all of the kind of things that represent the savageness of humanity are all like cultures of color. They're like Middle Eastern and South American cultures that are, you know, representative of the barbarism of humanity in these scenes, which, again, kind of a problem with that. Nothing about England and the Black Plague, and maybe we should teach them not to throw the, you know, the poop of the trash in the streets and nearly wipe themselves out or anything like that. It's just like, yeah, the Amazon, bro. They were wild, savages.
Or the Vikings, you know,
yeah, the Vikings pretty... anything. But like, that's, again, that's a questionable thing about like, okay, how, like, what are we doing here? Like, is this inclusionary? I still have some kind of problems with that, Disney. But we're not going to get too far down that rabbit hole because, again, Eternals doesn't go far enough down that rabbit hole for me to care all that much. It just is kind of a muddled mix of ideas that never feel like fleshed out.
I feel like I'm not allowed to like the movie now.
No, go ahead. You can, you, nobody has to agree with me.
But I don't have like arguments because I feel like every point you're making is extremely valid. And I didn't recognize any of those points. I was drinking a beer and enjoying myself watching this film. And I was just really into it, I guess, because of like, I really like the heady stuff. I really like the big picture spirituality stuff and the celestials and the Eternals being AI for me was like, oh my God, that makes so much sense. It's just such a cool take on it. Like, because I'm into AI and I'm into, you know, space and timey wimey wibbly wobblies. And we already know all that. So I was just like in it, I guess. I was just feeling it and like living in it. And when I walked out, I will say this, Kofi, when I walked out, I was like, I love this. And last week when we talked at spoiler free, I was like, I love this. But now that it's been this long, I'm kind of like, I really don't remember a lot of the stuff. Like, it didn't stick with me the way that I thought it would. I still really enjoyed it. But again, you're making a lot of points that I just didn't even, they just went right over my head. Like, I was just kind of enjoying the process. So now I'm kind of like, I don't know how I feel anymore. I'm confused.
That's all good. Yeah, we're approaching our time limit for the show, but let's talk about those post-credit scenes, first of all. Harry Styles is going to be Star Fox, you know, Thanos' brother, and Patton Oswalt is Pip the Troll, which is, for me, the real story. Good for Patton Oswalt for finally getting in the MCU. He has a great character as Pip the Troll. Yeah, but breaking news today, if you guys haven't checked out comicbook.com Marvel, I was ragging on Jim Viscardi about, you know, about these post-credit scenes because I didn't think they were – I mean, the Harry Styles thing is big because it's Harry Styles, right?
Right.
Is but he if you're an just talking actor? About,
yeah, yeah, he's been in Dunkirk. He's been in a couple things.
Okay.
But if you're just talking about like Star Fox and Pip the Troll, nobody knows who that is. Like nobody's gonna be excited about that. But it was Harry Styles, so that was the fun part. But the second, the post-credit scenes was Dane Whitman and the university, you know, at the end of the movie, Circe and the Eternals, who decided to kill the Eternal on Earth. You know, they get taken for judgment by what's his name, the Celestial, and they're going to get judged and all that. And basically, Dane wants to save Circe because, and he's been, you know, putting off the family secret of that he has the Ebony Blade, and he opens it in his university classroom and he's thinking about taking it, but he's scared because of the curse. And then we have a voice off screen that, you know, says, are you really ready to take up that sword? You know, and he looks up and he's like, what the, and it cuts to black. Well, Chloe Zhao let the cat out of the bag. So this is a final big spoiler. Well, it's not even a spoiler because it's not in the movie. That voice in that scene is none other than Mahershala Ali's Blade is in the final scene of Eternal. So that is who comes to see Dane Whitman as he's considering taking the Ebony Blade is Blade himself.
What?
Mahershala Ali, yes.
So that's awesome.
That is. Yeah, so this is
that Blade. Makes it so much better.
Yeah, and that's like, damn it, Jim. Like now I have to give Jim Viscardi credit for those post-credit scenes being awesome because it's Blade's first MCU
okay,
debut.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
Yeah. Yes. And now I'm thank just you. Hyped. The most, I think the thing that Eternals left me with the most is I'm hyped to see if Kit Harington shows up in the Blade reboot and
oh
see
gosh.
What would happen if Blade and Black Knight and the Ebony Blade go out for some vampire havoc. So I'm here for that. So they got me with that.
Yep.
For that alone, I'm happy I went to see Eternals just to see Blade's debut. But, other than that, yeah, this Marvel movie is going to end up at the bottom of my list. And honestly, I'm just going to—I agree with the people in the comments that said this should have been a Disney Plus series. It would have been an awesome Disney Plus series if we could have dealt every episode with a different Eternal and their
deep
story
dive, their character,
and their, and everything they had been through, Watchmen style. Like this would have been awesome.
Ooh, yeah.
So far, I feel like we've had an Eternals movie that should have been a series, an Inhuman series that should not have existed. And after all this, Marvel just needs to bring on the damn mutants, in my opinion. So that's
yeah, it is time for mutants.
Bring on the mutants.
Even bring me, I'm mutants. Even saying that. Let's go.
Yeah, so that's it. I'm not going to hate on Eternals because, like I said, Chloe Zhao is a beautiful director. The ensemble cast is great. And I want to see these characters return because I think after we got over this first stumble, like they're actually going to be much more fun in the MCU from here on out. So I'm looking forward to more of these characters being in the MCU. I don't necessarily need another Eternals movie. I could love to see them in some cosmic event film or some mixture that brings different characters together or something like that. But okay. That's it for us in Eternals. Jay, you have any final thoughts you want to get out before we go?
Oh, gosh. I'm just so, so, so excited about HBO Max's announcement of 8-Bit Christmas.
And that does it for this episode. Janelle, priceless. Never change.
Nintendo!
Never change. All right. So that'll do it, 8-Bit. You heard it from Jay. All right. That'll do it for this episode of Comic Book Nation. We love you guys. If you want to follow the show, follow us at Comic Book Nation Twitter account. We are on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and you can tell your smart home devices to fire up Comic Book Nation Podcast. We're also streaming on Saturdays on Paramount Plus, so subscribe if you haven't and you're looking for that mountain of entertainment. We will be back next week. Have a great week. Also, there will be a special episode of our Phase Zero podcast dealing with all just pure Eternals talk. We are keeping this channel all Eternals, all day
on
Twitch.
You should be on that, man.
So, yeah. I mean, I was talking to Brandon Davis earlier. We both got to do stuff, man. We're both busy guys.
Yeah.
But that's what we got to save that crossover for something big. yeah, comicbook.com, Twitch will be popping all day with Eternals discussions. So be sure to stay tuned here. All right, that'll do it. Thank you. We'll see you guys next week. This is Comic Book Nation. Peace.